So it's heating up here. So I'll try to stick to my half hour that I still have left, and then we can escape to the coffee break. Okay. So I leave the cluster algorithms now behind me, and now we're going to switch to a completely different topic, and that is finite size scaling. And so I have to start with a bit of mathematics, which I'm not very good at. So there might be minuses and factors of two, etc., missing. Yeah? This is not what I normally do. So, okay. So just to give this theoretical basis. So what I will do is I will introduce a new variable T, which is the reduced temperature. Not to be confused with time. Time is not, that doesn't play a role anymore. This is the reduced temperature, and it's the dimensionless distance to the critical temperature. Yeah? So the reduced temperature. And so then we know that at the critical temperature, we know that the correlation length has a certain scaling around the critical point. And so this was also introduced yesterday. Yeah, so this is the correlation length exponent, and there should be a minus here because it goes to infinity. Yeah. This minus is important enough that I know it. And so another one that I want to also write down is the one for the magnetic susceptibility. So that's chi, and that goes like t to the power minus gamma. So then basically this is the definition of gamma, apart from the fact that it goes like a power law, which is non-trivial, but that seems to be the case. So now if I have these two expressions, then I can actually combine them. And so I can also say that chi will go like correlation length to the power gamma over nu. Yeah? This one gives minus 1 over nu, and et cetera. Then you plug it in and you get this. Yeah, so this ratio also, you can also do it like this, and then you have, you got rid of the temperature in here. Now, you might wonder, why do I want to do that? Well, the thing is that obviously we want to study the Ising model in the infinite size limit. But given what I said before and this morning, that's not a very practical limit that you really want to get close to, because infinite size means infinite pain in computer simulations. Yeah. And so you want to actually work with modest size systems, and 100 squared is already pushing you. So you have to deal with the fact that your computer simulations are small systems, way smaller than experiment typically. So with finite system, the correlation length cannot exceed your system size. So L is the linear size of the system. Yeah, so we have this expression, and it's a very nice expression for the asymptotic infinite size system, but it's the system that we don't have. So in reality, actually, the expression is slightly different. You can expect that as long as xi is way smaller than L, the finiteness of the system doesn't play a big role. But once the correlation length approaches L, it starts to become noticed. Yeah? So it's the ratio of the correlation length and your system size that determines whether you see finite size corrections or not. So then it is reasonable to assume that the true expression is that this goes like what I have in the infinite system, But there is like some kind of function of L over Xi that gives me the corrections for the finite size. And so sneakily, I changed this symbol in this symbol as well. But that is justified because I now can say that, OK, I can absorb the prefactor here into this function chi0. Yeah. So my function chi0 of x absorbs this constant if the correlation length, if x is much larger than 1, yeah, x is L over xi, yeah. And psi 0 of x goes like, I mean, it has to compensate this divergence if the correlation length becomes larger than the system size. So then it has to go like gamma over nu as x goes to 0, so where this one is way less than this. Yeah. So this is the function that describes how the system saturates due to its finiteness. And I hope that I didn't make errors in like minuses, etc., or 1 over.
Should it be u over gamma?
Should that be xi over L? I think I copied this from a book. But also in copying I can make errors. You mean x to the power gamma over nu?
Ah, there we go.
Yeah. So I, anyway. I always struggle with this, and in front of the blackboard, it's hopeless that I can correct it. So I hope that I copied right, and that's what I have to live with. Okay, so now I go on with a little bit more and rewriting. And now I will define a new function, which again is called chi, but this time chi tilde, as a function of x, which is x to the power minus gamma times this function chi zero of x to the power nu. Yeah, I mean, why not define it this way? And the usefulness will come later. Yeah? I'm just doing mathematical manipulation, but that's all. That also means that I can write down that chi zero of y is equal to y to the power gamma over nu times chi tilde of y to the power 1 over nu. So that also is supposed to be simple mathematical manipulation. And so basically, y is my x to the power nu. Huh? So then you see that. So now, if I combine this expression, the expression that I have here, so this one expression I will call equation 1. And this is my equation 2. So if I combine 1 and 2, then I can write down that chi is equal to correlation length to the power gamma over nu times L over xi to the power gamma over nu times chi tilde of L over xi to the power 1 over nu. Yeah. And this I can simplify because this and this cancels. Yeah. So now I get L to the power gamma over nu, and this cancels, times chi tilde of L to the power 1 over nu times T, because correlation length to the power 1 over nu is my reduced temperature. Okay, so you just have to bear with me that probably I did the right mathematics, or at least I ended up with the right result. Yeah. And so now it comes to, okay, what does it mean and why do I bother doing all of this? So this actually turns out to be something which is very useful, because it tells me that if I actually make a plot and I use this as my variable along the x-axis, and if I then look at L to the power minus gamma over nu times chi, which is the susceptibility, and that I can get out of the fluctuations of the magnetization, then I am actually plotting a function chi tilde, irrespective of what L I have. Yeah? Whether I use 20 by 20 or 30 by 30, chi tilde is some function, and you should get the same result. So you get a data collapse. Yeah? So if L to the power minus gamma over nu times chi is plotted versus L to the power 1 over nu times the temperature, the reduced temperature, then the data should collapse. For different L. Yeah? So now, okay, so one way to say is, okay, if I know the exponents, then I can get a data collapse, and yeah, right, I have the right program. But obviously, this is more interesting if you don't know the exponents. Yeah? Because then what you can do is you play with the values of the exponents that you plug in, and you keep varying them until the curves fall on top of each other, and then lo and behold, you have indirectly determined these exponents. Yeah? Yeah?
In this particular example, you have the second order phase transition.
Yeah, this is about second order phase transitions. Yeah.
Okay. So does any of this analysis carry over to, I mean, people have done finite set scaling for first order phase transitions as well?
So with a first order phase transition, there is no diverging correlation length. And then typically you are solving a problem that is not there, right? Up to some extent. So I am solving the problem that second order phase transitions suffer under a correlation length that diverges. And no matter how big you take the system, the real correlation length eventually always becomes bigger. So you always have finite size effects. And with first order, it's not like that. Yeah? So I'm solving a problem here which does not exist in the case that you talk. But it doesn't mean that this approach can't be useful, but then you have to be more precise about what you want. Yeah? Because these power laws don't hold infinitely, have a range that is infinitely long valid. Yeah. Certainly if you go to negative temperatures, things should change and so on. Yeah. So it only is valid near the critical temperature. And how near is always,
How many different values of L do you plot this for?
If you have two very accurate curves, then that's enough, huh? Typically you do more, yeah. And what I suggested is that you use like 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, and 100, and then collapse them with your Metropolis algorithm. That's doable. And certainly if you implement the cluster algorithm, then it's doable in a matter of minutes. Yeah? You don't need to go beyond 100 to get like the first three digits of the exponents. I mean, if you want to get the fourth digit or the fifth, then you have to work hard. Yeah.
So what we went through now only holds for the system size either being much larger than the correlation length or much smaller, right?
No, it is the way that it saturates. So this function is describing how it saturates irrespective of your system size. I mean, eventually, correlation length will always surpass your system size.
So chi0 has not just these two properties, but sort of levels out.
Well, it is a continuous function, that, and the intermediate regime is less clear. But the tails are clear, mathematically. Yeah, so let me make this a little bit clearer. So how does your result typically look like? Okay, so normally, I mean, if you do a direct simulation, then you have like the temperature and you have like chi. And if you have an infinitely big system, then it shoots up to infinite. But I mean, your system is not infinite. So then at some point, it kind of has a shape like this, for instance, if L equals 100, let's say. So now, if you have a smaller system, yeah, let's say 50 by 50, then if you are far away from the critical temperature, it doesn't matter. You will find the same curve. Yeah, but a finite system can't diverge as much. So typically, you have like this for L equals 50, let's say. Yeah, and then if you are a real Scrooge and you go to very small systems, then you get just a shape that is a bit like this. Yeah, I mean it's almost possible to exactly enumerate it, I think. Well, okay, yeah. So this is typically the kind of results that you have. Yeah. And so, naively, you would say, okay, I just look at where the peak is, and that is my guess for the critical temperature. Well, the peak tends to shift with the different system size. Yeah, and then you have to extrapolate, where does it shift to if I would go to bigger systems? That is just it's not easy to do. It's bound to give you wrong results. So the alternative that I have is, okay, I have this data here, but why not plot L to the power minus gamma over nu times chi as a function of L to the power 1 over nu times reduced temperature? Yeah. And so what's going to happen is that the big system size, yeah, gets multiplied by a rather small number. Yeah. So the curve of 100 is suppressed, yeah? And the nice thing is that it is suppressed in such an amount that actually all these curves will fall on top of each other. The peak height will collapse, yeah? Because that's how the susceptibility diverges. That's how I chose my exponent, yeah? So here you get a curve that looks like this for L equals 100, yeah? So you squeeze it in, yeah? You reduce the peak height, but you also blow it up horizontally because you multiply it with a bigger number for the bigger system sizes. Yeah, you squeeze it and you stretch it compared to the other ones. And you do it actually in such a way that the other ones that you get something like this. Yeah? So this mathematical manipulation actually achieves what I predicted. Yeah? So the vertical scaling is such that all the peaks are equally high. And the horizontal scaling you can work out is exactly such that the width is all becoming the same, asymptotically. Yeah?
So to get the right plot, you're fitting three things, right? Gamma,
yeah.
Mu, and T.
And T, yeah, that's right. Yeah, T is in here, yeah. So now, if your TC is wrong, so TC actually is the one, yeah? If your TC is wrong, then if your system becomes bigger, you see them it walking away to the left or to the right. So you play with your value for TC in gnuplot, and then you see it goes out of focus. Yeah, so you tune it such that it stays centered. And you play with gamma over nu until the peaks are all equally high. Yeah, so you just vary it and then woof. And then you play with 1 over nu to get the width the same. And then you look up what did I plug in for gamma over nu and 1 over nu, and then you find them, NTC. Yeah? So actually, it's something that you can easily do by hand. Invariably, there are students who want to automize this process, and that never works. And so getting error bars is also painful, but I mean, you do get these exponents rather accurately. So it is a very powerful method. Yeah. And interestingly, this peak does not lie at zero. Yeah. It doesn't have to lie at zero. Yeah. I mean, yes, it diverges in the infinite system size diverges at the critical temperature, but you blow it up with an infinite factor if you have an infinite system. So the tiny difference from the critical temperature gets blown up such that it always has the same kind of shift. Yeah. I mean, if this peak would be exactly at zero, then I could solve the 2x2 Ising model and look at where the peak is, and then I have my answer for the critical temperature. And I mean, if that would also work for 3D, then I would be extremely famous. But it doesn't work for 3D. Yeah? You can't get the critical temperature of the three-dimensional Ising model from a 2x2x2 system. Unfortunately. Yeah. Is this clear, the finite size scaling? Yeah. So this is a very powerful technique that allows you to actually extrapolate in some sense to the infinite size system limit in a very smart way. And that usually is extremely useful because smaller systems are easier simulated than bigger systems. And it is a generally applicable technique if you have something that diverges at the critical temperature. So I think that this probably is very useful in quantum gravity as well. And that is also. Yeah? Is this clear? Okay. Yeah, and it requires a bit of work, but the way of thinking about this is rather elegant. And if I'm not mistaken, Wilson got the Nobel Prize for this, right? So so it was also appreciated in a way that many of us would like to achieve. But yeah. Okay. So that brings me also close to the end of my lectures. And so what I think are the take-home ingredients of my lectures that are relevant for you. So one thing that I hope I convince you is that if you do Monte Carlo methods, you have to make sure that you have to have detailed balance. And you have to make sure that you have ergodicity, because this is the recipe to get a correct algorithm. Yeah, and it's not the only way, but there are a few exceptions. And in general, this is usually how you do it. The second message that I hoped that I brought across by talking about these cluster algorithms and so on is that finding better Monte Carlo algorithms is the way for progress. Yeah, so just like, I mean, building these special purpose computers, they were actually, I mean, they were obsolete before they were finished. Algorithmic improvement is lasting, and building faster machines or going to super machines, Blue Gene, etc. I mean, you run the danger that if somebody is smart and finds a better algorithm, then you're obsolete. So it doesn't give lasting improvement of the area. Better algorithms are lasting, so better. And I think that finite size scaling is a useful technique. So these are the main things that I wanted to bring across, other than that computer simulations are fun also, but I can say that, but that doesn't convince you unless you are already convinced, yeah? Okay, so this is it for me. There is still is the tutorial starting in at 11, right? At 2, yeah. And so then I hope you continue with the Metropolis algorithm. And if you get that one working, then there are two routes to do more, if you want to do more. One of them is to also implement the Wolf algorithm, if you like programming and a programming challenge. Yeah, I succeeded in writing it in 5 lines, but it was a lot of work. Yeah. The alternative is that you use your Metropolis algorithm and do simulations at different system sizes and see whether you can get the finite size scaling working. And then, I mean, how clean can you get these exponents? So, and if you really, really want to do it, then you do both. The cluster algorithm and the finite size scaling, and then you can get like these exponents in like 3 or 4 digits or so. Yeah? Okay, that's it for this morning. I think impossible to predict how good algorithms will be that have not been invented yet. Yeah, so that's a hard question that you ask. Well, what was the other question?
I think you said it's not known how good they can get.
It requires a stroke of genius to find a fast algorithm, and how genial somebody can be is always difficult. Yeah. So yeah, it's more like a faith or a belief that it should be possible to find. And there are many cases where people found actually cluster algorithms in areas where you wouldn't expect them to work, and so and I don't know quantum gravity well enough to know whether there it can work or maybe even has been done or yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday at the evening lecture, Peter said that it's very difficult for Monte Carlo methods to parallelize. So are there algorithms ready to do that? So I think the problem is at the Markov chain.
Parallelization. I mean, usually Monte Carlo can be parallelized relatively easily. You just do 2 simulations and you average the result. Yeah? Or you do 1,000 and you average them. Yeah. Or if you want to simulate at 10 different system sizes and 10 different temperatures, you just use 100 processors. Each one does just 1 system size and 1 temperature. So he was referring to if you want to reproduce 1 big simulation, yeah, exactly, on many processors. That tends to be hard. But there are ways of doing things better. I mean, you can do the domain decomposition if you have a big system. And so then 1 processor works on some part of the system, and another processor works on another part, and occasionally you have to exchange information. That works fine. In high-dimensional systems, that's obviously harder than in low-dimensional systems. Or you have to, I mean, in Monte Carlo, you always have the freedom to modify your dynamics such as you wish, as long as you keep detailed balance and ergodicity. And sometimes you can just say, okay, I make the black and the white squares of my chess field, and I work on the white ones for some time, and then on the black ones. And all the white fields never touch each other. So then you can also do a lot of stuff parallel and so on. So there are ways, I think. So domain decomposition and so on. One other thing is that the easiest thing is that in Monte Carlo dynamics, forward in time is the same as backward in time because you don't have inertia. And so if you want to have one long simulation, you always can use one processor to go forward in time and the other to go backward in time, and then you glue them together and then you have a long simulation, twice as long. So things like that are possible. A factor of two is nice if you have to wait 1 year rather than two. Yeah. So these are a couple of things I can say about parallel implementations. Yeah. Other questions or remarks? If not, coffee time, I think.